I was extremely interested to hear the Birkswell project because it's music to my ears. Just to give you a bit of background, my title is Historic Places of Worship Support Officer for the Diocese of Norwich, and I am part of a national network of support officers, which is partly funded by English Heritage and partly funded by dioceses or other religious organisations. It's not wholly Anglican led. And you know, I think it's very interesting that we have this national network. The majority of support officers are interested mainly in the fabric of our churches, religious buildings, and restoration and maintenance and that kind of thing. A few of us, including Helen McGowan from the Diocese of Coventry, are much more interested in working with visitors. What are the things that we ought to be doing to make sure that our churches are open and welcoming? And I am one of those. So yes, in the Diocese of Norwich, we have, I think, 629 churches. It could be 656 churches. I'm never quite sure. I occasionally ask the bishop how many churches he thinks he's got in his diocese. The majority of which are Grade 1 and Grade 2 listed medieval churches. We do have the most staggering amount of churches. Wherever you go in Norfolk, you will see a church tower. And this is one of the things that brings huge numbers of visitors into the county. And the visitor spend in Norfolk annually is 2.6 billion pounds. Now, I would love to know if any of that money goes into the coffers of our churches. I suspect it probably does, but I don't really know. And we do have churches of national and international importance in Norfolk. Churches like Ranworth, St. Nicholas Chapel in King's Lynn, who you might have seen something about yesterday. So what exactly am I doing running an Open Churches project in Norfolk? Just to start you off, in 2005, the then Archdeacon of Norfolk thought we really ought to be doing something to encourage more visitors into our churches, and more importantly, encourage local people to open their churches. Too many churches were locked. And so we were very fortunate to be able to get some money from the EU Lead Plus programme to set up a pilot project in the east of the county, in the Broads area of Norfolk. And we called it the Broads and Rivers Open Churches Project. Open, and by an open church, we mean one that is open 7 days a week. The Archdeacon was very, very clear. Yes, churches should be open on Sundays, but that is not actually, that is important, but that's not the only thing. The church must be open the other 6 days. And we really wanted to know from this project, how easy is it to turn a locked church into an open one? What support services would the churches need to be able to do this? And what funding might also be helpful for churches? As any of you who might be Anglicans know, the church is very good at taking money from us, but not necessarily giving any money back to us. And in this project, we also set up a number of hub churches across the Broads and Rivers area, in important centres, in the hope that the people in those churches would help the local churches in opening up and giving them support, and that the local churches would learn from the hub churches of their experience dealing with openness. But as you can imagine, this didn't quite work because people really like to do their own thing. However, the people in the hub churches were extremely helpful to me. We also decided that we would have 1 week a year called Open Churches Week, which I'll tell you about later. So in 2010, the money came in from English Heritage and my post was set up. And going from looking after about 150 churches, I then went to, across the whole diocese, 629 churches, which, as you can imagine, is a very large number indeed. And I just have to just tell you something about the Diocese of Norwich. Unfortunately, for historical reasons, the Diocese of Norwich is not contiguous with the county of Norfolk. So there are churches in the northwest of the county which are not in our diocese, which are in the next door diocese of Ely. And we have churches in the Lowestoft, North Suffolk area, which are in our diocese and not in the Diocese of St Edmundsbury in Ipswich. Just slightly confusing for people, but it's just one of the quirks of history. So my job was obviously to continue to open help churches to be open and welcoming. And I actually feel very strongly about this. I think it gives a bad signal to people if there is a locked church door. A, who are you locking it against? Is there something in that church which really needs to be defended? You also don't know, if you've got a locked church door, how many people you are turning away who might have a real need for going inside a spiritual space. And as any of you who, again, are Anglicans or churchgoers, the insurance company, and the major one is Ecclesiastical Insurance, says it is far safer to have a church open than to have a locked church. The main reason for that is if you have a locked church, more destruction can take place at the building than if it was open. And so, I think it is really very, very important to open churches. And so one of the things that I do, I'm constantly travelling, as you can imagine, across the diocese. I'm talking to churches, I'm working with deaneries, I'm doing all kinds of things to try and help churches. And one of the things that we have found is that churches need help to find volunteers. And so this is my latest little project, is working with an organisation called Voluntary Norfolk. We are trying to find ways in which we can encourage the churches to go back into the centre of their community and to encourage all kinds of different people to come and work. Maybe to open and close the church, beginning of the day, end of the day, help with events, exhibitions, all kinds of things. So, there we are. One of the important things for churches, I think, is signage. I don't know how many of you, drive around trying to... You can see this church tower over there, but you have absolutely no idea how to find it. There's no notice up anywhere. And when you get there, again, you're not quite sure whether it's going to be open or not. So signage is something which is very, very important. And we do encourage our churches, to have clear welcome signs in front of their church. The other thing that we have encouraged churches, and we certainly did this in the Broads and Rivers Open Churches project, was to have really nice leaflets. This one, I don't think you can see very clearly, but this one is a cycle route round a benefice and with various things about the churches in that benefice. I also produced, because a lot of people come to the Broads to go on boats, I produced an Open Churches stave guide so that people knew on a boat where they could park their boat and go into a church. So that's what happens now. As you can see, we've got probably about 71% of our churches open. What we have done is a complete survey of the diocese. It took some work, I can tell you, getting the information back, but we now know exactly how many open churches we have and how many locked churches we have. And I count churches that are keyholder churches as locked, because you can go to a church and it says, Mrs. So-and-so has the key, but I bet you anything when you're there, Mrs. So-and-so will be out. So, you know, there's no way you can get into that church. So 71% of our churches are open. Now, since 2011, we have decided to produce an Open Churches booklet, and you will see copies of this on the table over there. We thought this would be a good idea because we have so many visitors coming to the county, and it gives a rundown of all the churches that are open and lots of information, including sat-nav information and so on. And what we've done with these is in 2011 we printed 45,000. And we get those booklets distributed by a commercial distributor called Take One Media, and I see they've got a stand down in the entrance hall here. And those booklets go out to Tesco's, to Morrison's, to B&B's, to tourist information points. We put them in libraries all over the place. And in 2011, we were very interested to hear from Take One Media that they had we gave them 38,000 leaflets, and all those leaflets had gone between Easter and September. And in their list of, you know, popularity list of leaflets, the Open Churches booklet came in third against all the other booklets. So I was very, very interested to see this, because it obviously means that people are interested in going around churches. So in 2012, we've actually printed 55,000 Open Churches booklets. And again, I know that they are going down extremely well with people. I've also produced for my churches a marketing pack. And you might say, why do churches need to market themselves? But they do. They need to tell people that they're there, what's important in their churches. And I think one of the things that's come out of this symposium for me is that you historians have got huge amounts of information which could be very, very useful to churches in their openness and welcome to visitors. There are really interesting historical facts, there are all kinds of things which people need to know. But also, and maybe you haven't thought about this, but you need these days to tell people about the basic facts of the interior of a church. They do not know what a font is. Yes, of course, they know
font when it comes to a computer, but they don't know what a font is, what it's used for. They don't, I mean, it sounds silly, but they don't know what an altar is. They don't know what a lectern is. They don't know why some places have wonderful eagle lecterns and other people have whatever they have. All these kind of things you need to tell people. And of course, you've got to think of the future generations, so you do also need to make sure that you are telling children these things as well. And there are all kinds of ways in which you can do that. I also think it's very, very important to have spiritual interpretation of churches. A lot of us have stained glass windows, and in those stained glass windows there are stories. You have wall paintings, you have rood screens, all these things have stories, and these often are stories of our Christian faith, and so why not have some form of spiritual interpretation in churches? And then the church marketing pack also is helping churches with regard to business plans, because if you are thinking of a major development, or you want to reorder your church, and you know, there is quite a lot of reordering going on, like removal of pews, even moving the font from one area of the church to another, then you really do need to have a proper plan. This is essential these days because funders are, you know, getting more and more difficult to approach. So if you've got something that looks like it looks professional, that has got your statement of need, statement of significance, other things in there, then you are more likely to attract funding. I'm not saying you will, but you are more likely to attract funding. And we also give our churches help with regard to fundraising. So Open Churches Week, we have now, and we have had since 2006, during the first week in August. And we chose the first week in August, A, because it's the height of the holiday season, but interestingly enough, the first Sunday in August in Norfolk is when the Lord Bishop of Norwich goes by boat as the Abbot of St. Bennet's Abbey, which is now a ruin, to conduct an annual service. So we thought this was a very good start. Now, you might wonder why there are classic cars parked on the lawn in the close of Norwich Cathedral. And the reason for this is, for the last 4 years, we have run a classic car rally for people to go around churches. Now, you might think, oh, what on earth are you doing something like that for? This was actually the idea of the Dean of Norwich Cathedral, who has a classic car himself. But actually, it's very interesting because it is bringing a totally different group of people to visit churches. And when we first started doing it, a great number of our drivers had never set foot in our churches. Now, you know, they can't wait for the next car rally to come, so they're going to visit some other churches. So, I think, you know, it has worked really quite well. And I do encourage our churches during Open Churches Week, those closed churches, please dip your toe in the water of opening. You don't have to open every day of that week, but maybe you can open 2 days of the week. Maybe you could open 4 days of the week. Maybe you could put on exhibitions or events. And especially if you are wanting to do development plans in your church, please have an exhibition telling people what you are doing. A, because if you haven't discussed it with your local community, then that's a very good way of doing it. But also, it is a way of showing people that actually this is not a dead church, it is a living church, and we are moving on into the future. Now, my view, and I don't know if this is controversial or not, is that actually our medieval churches were our first community centres. And I have got quite a number of churches as a rural county, you can imagine, that are very remote. Tiny villages, They've got no other service at all. They've lost their pub, they've lost their school, they've lost their shop. The church is the only building of any significance left. And so I am encouraging churches to think about how they could use their churches in a more communal way. And a large number of them are doing it. Of course, one of the things that one has to think about these days are toilets and kitchens. And some churches lend themselves to those and others don't. But there are more and more churches that are certainly thinking of community use. As I have already said, I actually now have a team of church ambassadors. As you can imagine, I can't actually do everything myself. And my church ambassadorial team consists of church wardens who are very experienced and also a couple of clergy who help me and help churches in across a range of things. And that is just an example of a business plan. From St Michael's Church in Reefham. Now this is actually a very, very interesting church because there are two churches on one site joined together. And so one church is now the church, and the other one has been converted into a community centre. The other thing I do is Art Alive in Churches, which we started in 2008. And the idea behind that, and we started this with the arts officers of the local councils and Norwich County Council, was we felt that people didn't really know enough about the heritage art and craft skills that went into the building of our churches and their artefacts. And we are very, very short in this country of people who have got the relevant skills. We haven't got enough woodcarvers, stonemasons, flint knappers, letterers, all kinds of things. We just haven't got enough of them. So we thought through Art Alive, we might start encouraging people, especially young people, to think about these kind of things as careers. And so over the time that we've done Art Alive in Churches, we've concentrated on particular themes and we've run demonstrations of craft. And in fact, we've included poetry and music and all kinds of other things as well. And this year, we're concentrating on artists and angels, because angels do seem to be particularly a favourite thing of everybody. And so we are concentrating on angels that are painted and that are carved in wood, stone and marble. We have got some extremely fine examples of hammer beam and double hammer beam roofs, as well as obviously of our extremely fine collection of rood suites. And what we do is we have a major exhibition to start Art Alive off in Norwich. And then this year the exhibition is going to two other centres, and we've got demonstrations in various churches around the country, around the county. And I reckon that we attract well over 20,000 visitors for a weekend, for an Art Alive weekend. So it is becoming hugely popular. We have also worked with schools, and I'm particularly fond of this Dragon Trail leaflet. Over in the Broads, there's a village called Ludham, which has the most magnificent church, not very far from St. Bennet's Abbey. And in the Middle Ages, apparently, they had a worm, in other words, a dragon, that was making life very difficult for the villagers. And they didn't know how to get rid of this dragon. But in the end, somebody decided the only way to do it was to block up his hole. So when he flew back, he couldn't get in. He was absolutely furious that he couldn't get back into his hole, flew off, and to this day, he is under the ruins of St. Bennet's Abbey. Well, you can imagine, children just love this story. And so we now have a dragon trail around the churches there, and St. Ben's Abbey, and we worked with three local primary schools to design the cover of the leaflet for us. And that, as I say, has been, you know, really hugely popular. The other thing that that we have been doing in the county over the last 3 years is working with BBC History. The first year, we worked with them on the Normans in Norfolk, and so we had Norman church trails, and there were lots of other things, archaeology, all kinds of things going on. Last year, I can't quite remember, but I think, again, it was mostly archaeology. And this year, it is the Great British Story. And you may be aware that Michael Woods has started a series on BBC Two on Friday. And certainly some of our work in Norfolk is in there. And this actually has proved to be very beneficial. Working with the BBC is slightly problematic, but actually it has brought a range of people together in the county who don't normally work together. The museum service, I mean, it sounds silly, doesn't it? But the museum service, the archives, the archaeological services, the churches, you know, we know about each other, but we don't consistently get together. And this is a very good way in which we can talk and share activities and so on. And so that's really me and our project. As I say, I am absolutely passionate about making sure that our churches are open. And there is no doubt about it that people really appreciate having an open church. But as you can imagine, for some churches, this is daunting. If you've got a remote church, your PCC members are all in their 80s and there are only three of them. You know, what do they do? So the whole point of our project is to help people, to make it easy for them. And I think that we are, I hope, beginning to do this and to provide them with the support that they need. So thank you very much indeed.
Wonderful, Jenny. You're doing a very professional work here, and I'm sure there are a lot of questions to the project. Comments, please.
Could you just clarify why you regard a locked church is more at risk than an open church?
Well, the insurance company that says this. Because the damage that can be done to rare stained glass windows because somebody's breaking in, or, you know,
right,
breaking a door down or whatever it is.
Exactly. I just wonder how you assess the risk from thieves of lead and metal, which is...
And now that is slight, that is different because that's external. And unfortunately, even on one or two of our open churches, we have had lead thefts. I don't know whether you're aware, but there is actually an organisation has been set up by English Heritage and ACPO, which is the Association of Chief Police Officers, called ARCH, A-R-C-H, to fight against cultural crime, you know, heritage crime. And... one of the things that we're doing in ARCH is training volunteers to be the eyes and ears in rural areas going around. The other thing that I think, and I believe this is beginning to happen in Gloucestershire, I don't know much about it, but there is a view that if we infused our young people with local history, with being proud of where they live, civic pride, all that kind of thing, this might start to have an effect on vandalism. Now, you know, there's nothing concrete about this at the moment, but I think it is a strong possibility. And again, you know, it does worry me
that people have lost their knowledge of their local areas. And particularly for me in Norfolk, I think it's very, very important that we get people to reconnect with their local history, not only in the county, but actually with what was Burgundy and Flanders, because we have very, very strong links. Artists, trade and everything were constantly coming to and fro the county in medieval times, and nobody knows about it. It's not taught in schools. So I think all these kind of things could make a difference.
I was wondering whether your project is designed also for contemporary buildings, given that this big amount of medieval and...
Oh, yes. I mean, I covered the whole range.
Yeah, yeah.
We haven't got too many modern churches, actually. Most of them are medieval. We have got some Victorian ones as well, and one or two modern ones.
And is there any difference between handling them inside this project?
No, not really. No, no. I still think that, you know, if you've got a modern church or an old one, there are still lots of things you could be telling people. City churches are different because actually, although Norwich has a huge number of churches, as you probably know, most of them are no longer looked after by the diocese. And so I don't have much to do with city churches.
Just a small point, but as a church crawler as well as a priest, I enjoy enormously church crawling. One of the things that I do think was very attractive about one of your leaflets was the leaflet which said Norfolk Open Churches 2012. It immediately says, this is up to date. This is current information. And I think if you are sort of browsing a leaflet stand, knowing that that is current is very important. And it just jumped out at me.
Yes,
so that was,
that's very... Yes, I think that is very true. And actually, one of the things that I'm working on at the moment with our communications officer is a church app scheme for our churches, because I think that again is, you know, very important.